definition. I'm David Cadavy, best-selling author and entrepreneur, and I was just doing some late-night editing, and I wanted to do some shout-outs to some of the people who have been making reviews on the iTunes store. You know, I told you that we have our chance to be in the new and noteworthy section of iTunes in the first several weeks of the show, and first launch day, we made it into the top 20 on the careers category. The careers is a subcategory of business. Now, we were in the top 50 on the business category. I'd love to hit the top 20 in the business category during that time period that we have. So I wanted to say thank you to some of those people who had written reviews. And here we go. You're going to notice that some of these names have numbers in them. They sound like they are email addresses that you might have had in high school or something, but I think it's a function of having to have a unique name when you sign up to review something on iTunes. So we have one from Selegna 2020. Great exploration of finding fulfillment through work. Awesome to learn from people choosing themselves instead of the well-worn path. Thank you so much for that. Tommy 2118. I really like the tone of this podcast. David does a really good job at keeping it conversational and controlling the flow of the show. The choice of guests so far have been top-notch. I only have a few regular podcasts that I listen to, and this one earned a spot on that list from the go. That's an honor, Tommy. Thank you so much. And we have one from Emo Before. Apparently, Emo Before must have been Emo Before and is no longer Emo. So, first of all, I gotta say I'm glad that you're feeling better. Love that David asks great questions and gets his guests to talk about insights they haven't talked about elsewhere. Super valuable and interesting. Thank you so much. And there's still time for you to write a review on iTunes. If you love the show, please give it 5 stars, and that will help us get in that new and noteworthy section on iTunes. And also subscribe so you don't miss any new episodes. Thank you so much. Like to listen to audio? Of course you do. That's what you're doing right now, after all. You're probably also commuting, working out, showering, or some other thing. It's great because you're getting a lot done. And that's really why I love Audible. It gives me access to thousands of audiobooks that I can listen to with my brain while my body is busy. So what it does is it transforms my chores, my commute, and my morning routine into book time. So if you haven't tried it, really, I gotta say, you're missing out. So head to cadavy.net/audible and get a free Audible audiobook that you can listen to on your smartphone or tablet. And keep in mind, though, that after 30 days, they're gonna charge your credit card, and it's only $14.95 a month. But if you cancel before your trial is up, you're gonna get to keep your book anyway, and you'll still be supporting the show. So I recommend you start off with How to Win Friends and Influence People. Now, that's not a hint or anything. It's a classic. It will change your life. Or you can choose from 180,000 other titles. Just go to cadavy.net/audible and claim your free audiobook. Today's guest really embodies what I'd like to help listeners of the show achieve. She's really built a business and a lifestyle doing the things that interest her, and she really injects her own personality into everything that she does. Saya Hillman runs a company called Mac and Cheese Productions. She started way back in 2004 after getting fired from her job. She's been featured in the Huffington Post, New York Times, and Forbes, amongst many other places. Mac and Cheese is a much more in-person business than most of the listeners are probably used to hearing about. It runs events such as Fear Experiment, where participants face their fears by putting together a show and performing live in front of hundreds of people. And they also run many more events that help people break through their fears and connect with others. The thing that drew me to Saya's work is how completely off the beaten path it is. She really decided the things that she likes to do and has found a way to make a living doing those things. And I'm also fascinated by her willingness to do the things that don't scale. So much of us hold ourselves back from an idea just because it requires a physical location or it's not all digital, but Saya really embraces doing those things, so there's a lot to learn from her about kind of crafting a culture and getting the details right before scaling up. You're going to hear some great thoughts about turning your own challenges into a business and getting started if you've been holding yourself back And you also get some productivity tips, including how to get started with Evernote if you just can't seem to get into it. Here's the interview. Okay, I'm here in the studio with Saya Hillman. And Saya, I was watching your TEDx talk the other day, and you said that you once made a list of things that you'd like to get paid to do. And on that list was things like make collages or play board games. So my first question for you today is, are you a professional board game player?
Well, if the definition of professional is, do I get paid to play board games? I guess, yes, I am. Yeah, I made that list when I got fired about 11 years ago. And I think that a lot of times when you start thinking about, what could I do? What, you know, if I could do anything, what would I want it to, what would I want it to be?
If
what would
I won the lottery and didn't have to work.
Exactly, exactly. But then you start letting thoughts of, oh, I'm not going to put this on the list because that would never happen. And why should I dream? Why should I, you know, reach for something that is obviously not going to come true? And I think I did one of the best decisions in my life at that point was not letting those thoughts take over and being able to put down, if I could get paid to play board games in flip-flops and jeans on my couch meeting strangers and have them bring me food and drink, let's put that down on the list.
I was going to ask about the rest of the list, but I think that pretty much encompasses the whole thing, kind
yeah,
of, doesn't it?
And 11 years later, that's what I do for a living, so not bad.
Cool. So I'm sure everybody who's listening now is wondering, well, how do you do that? How do you get paid to play board games and in flip-flops in jeans on the couch, have friends bring you drinks? And I think I probably forgot a couple other things from the list. But.
That's okay. Yeah. So I basically, for very selfish reasons, started my company, Mac and Cheese Productions, where when I got fired, I realized I never wanted a boss again. And I also realized that there are really painful, awkward ways of meeting people, networking events, singles events. I'm sure everybody has been to those events where you're like, I should have just stayed home in my, you know, yoga pants, yeah, eating Ben and Jerry's, watching Friends reruns. This is a complete waste of time, complete waste of money. And I couldn't handle going to any more of those events. When I graduated, went to school in Boston, came back to Chicago, and I kind of had to start all over again, you know, building my network and my community, which I think a lot of us as adults go through. And it was a lot tougher than I thought it was going to be and that I thought that it should be. So yeah. Selfishly, I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, my life shouldn't be work, gym, watch TV, work, gym, watch TV, work, gym, watch TV. Like, there has to be more to that, yeah, than that.
You had this problem that you wanted to solve, sort
exactly.
of. Like, it's difficult to meet people when you get out of college and stuff. And, you know, especially, I work for myself, so you work for yourself, but you're around people all the time. So,
but I wasn't, and that was the point. So when I started my company, I wasn't really around people all the time, and you know, I was working from home, and it can definitely get lonely and all that jazz. So I just started throwing events that I would actually want to go to, and
That's
it
great,
turns
yeah.
out that the whole world doesn't want to go to John Barleycorn to meet people or to, you know, another networking event at the back of a bar where you're, you know, kind of looking over someone's shoulder to see who better you can talk to. And it's all about you, and you're trying to, like, get away from this guy who's, like, cornered you and is just talking about himself. You know, we've all been to those events, and
yeah,
they're just horrible. So that's how Mac and Cheese started.
Yeah, so you kind of had, like, an idea of events that you wanted to go to, and so you made your own events. I guess to give people background on the business, what are some of the events that you run at Mac and Cheese Productions?
Sure. So the first one that started, it wasn't a business venture. I just enjoy bringing people together in uncomfortable situations and making them feel comfortable. So just for friends, and I wasn't charging anything, and I was just doing it because it was fun to do. And I started throwing these dinner parties called Minglers, where people would come over to my space. I think that environment is really important in creating a space where you're allowing people to be vulnerable and let their guard down. And that's why it was really important to me have it in a home environment. So people would come over on a Friday or Saturday night. And the caveat was that you had to come by yourself. Because I think when you go places with people you know, you stand in the corner and you talk to them the
yeah.
whole time, right? And also the flip side of that is that oftentimes when you're with people who know you, you feel like you have to be David the extrovert or David the introvert or David whoever they know you as.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go somewhere where nobody knows you, it's a blank slate. And that can
oh, yeah,
be really
I like
freeing.
That.
It's really nice to be able to be David whoever you want to be, right? And there's no external baggage that's being brought to the table. So So I started throwing these events for friends and high class problem. I started getting inundated with all these emails from friends of friends saying, my friend went to this dinner party where she had to come by herself and it sounds really cool. Can I come? And then Time Out Chicago did an article on me. And long story short, I started getting all these random strangers coming over, and I was spending all this money on random people in my house, and they were having a great time and I was having a good time, but I was also like, I need to make money somehow, right? So I started charging, and that was, the Minglers were the first events that I started doing where I kind of was keyed into people are really looking for alternative ways to meet people and alternative options to kind of going out for dinner and a movie or going to the bar, that type of thing. So
So then that has built into a number of different offerings, right? Like I guess last time I saw you, I was standing in your living room and there were, 70 people there or something like that. And I was reading from my journal in an event called Idea Potluck.
Yes. Right?
So that's one of them.
Yeah. So,
and by the way, living room, it's a big living room.
It is a big living room. One of the reasons I am in this space is because the Minglers actually just blew up. And the last place I was in, there was like 80 of us packed in this tiny place. And it was an August humid day. And all the girls, like, makeup was sweating off their faces. And we all felt like sardines. So it's like, I got to move to a bigger space. So that was a big business risk for me, was to jump and be like, I'm going to move to a space that is, double what I was paying. And I don't know if it's going to work out. One of the best decisions I ever made, opened up so many doors, one of them being Idea Potluck, where I'm a big believer of stealing and tweaking. There are so many wonderful things that are out there already. So, don't reinvent the wheel. Cliche, I think, is very applicable, but there's a lot of things out there that you may like, except for X, Y, and Z, a couple of things that you want to change about them. So there are numerous events out there that have this kind of short format where a few select people, 6, 8, 10 people are given, 5, 6, 10 minutes to do whatever they want. And so that has existed for years now. Pikchakacha, Ignite, TED Talks, those are a few examples. And my husband and I loved the idea of getting a bunch of creative people together in a room and giving them a wide open blank slate to do whatever they wanted, but having the parameter of you only get 6 minutes to do it. Because I think when you get a lot of creative people together and they're all obviously very excited about their passion projects and their interests, their pet peeves, their whatever it is, nobody knows when to shut up, right?
Yeah,
everybody's talking
over each
other.
I'm used to getting an hour.
Right, exactly.
So 6 minutes was tough.
And also I think that this society we're in today, everybody has such short attention spans. And so I thought six minutes is perfect. So what we did is a lot of the similar events that are out there require you to use slides and technology, and not everybody is into that. And I think that can take away from some presentations. And also, as an audience member, I don't necessarily want to sit and listen to 8 PowerPoints in a row, right? So I stole the idea and I tweaked it, where now our rule is just 6 minutes and you can do whatever you want. And that's why you were in my living room.
And also, and when you invited me to it, your invitation sort of pushed me to this idea of reading from my journal, which was a very personal thing that I probably wouldn't normally do. And I don't remember what it was about your invitation, but somehow I was like, well, I could talk about, these various things, or here's some presentations I have, or, I could just read from my journal. I think that was one of the ideas that you kind of suggested. So you definitely had your own personality to it.
I love that. And because we hear that from a lot of the presenters who we call dishes, because they, we hear a lot of people say, normally, I have these stock, keynote presentations and I can talk about my job or the things that people hire me to be keynote speakers about. But because you create such a warm, inviting, welcoming environment, I'm going to try something new. I'm going to try not using notes. I'm going to try sharing something that's really personal. I might break down and cry. I can't tell you how many times we have people in the audience crying and people up, presenting crying.
Might have happened that night.
Yeah.
As well,
yes. I feel like almost every single potluck, we've got some tears and some laughter. And I think another thing that I really look for in presenters is a mix of people who speaking in front of people, they do it all the time and they are not scared at all. And then also bringing to the table people who this is the first time they've ever done this and they are crapping. Can I say crap?
Yeah, okay, sure. Good. Say what.
Okay, I don't know where this is going
now. I can always edit
it. Okay, good. So where people are crapping their pants because they have never spoken in front of anybody, and that's why they decided to do it. They wanted to challenge themselves. So I love giving people, again, going back to the minglers and asking people to do things that are scary, and people are willing to say yes because you set this environment of like, don't, everybody's gonna love you no matter what. Embrace your suckage, embrace being different, embrace, like, that's what my network looks to in people and admires in people.
Yeah, that was great. And you could totally feel that night at that event. So you got Idea Potluck, you have the Minglers, and then you also recently just had another, I believe it's called Fear Experiment, right?
Yes. And we have recovered. It was a couple weeks ago.
That's a huge undertaking.
It is. That's my baby. Where, yeah. So, Fear Experiment. That, talking about embracing your suckage, actually, that is how Fear Experiment was born. 5 years ago, I really wanted to be a Broadway star, but I do not have any of the skills, singing, dancing, acting, any of that, to be a Broadway star. But I think it is really unfair that, even if you don't have those skills, that I will leave this world without having the opportunity to have a standing ovation for my dancing and singing and, you know, theater skills. So I decided I should concoct a situation where I could get a paying audience to give me a standing ovation for my lack of ability. And I was like, well, no one is going to pay to see me do any of this stuff by myself, but they might pay to see a group of people saying, I'm bad at this, I'm owning it, and let's go, as a way to challenge themselves. So, and I also have this huge network of people who say yes, whose default is yes as opposed to no, which makes my life so much fun, knowing I have these crazy people who will say yes to anything I propose. So 5 years ago, I proposed Dance Experiment, and I just kind of pulled that name out of thin air, and I said, this is what I propose, that I will rent a dance studio. I will hire a choreographer. We will look for a theater. We will attempt to sell tickets. In order to participate, you have to sign up by yourself as a way to meet new people and challenge yourself. You have to be bad at dancing. And something about this whole idea has to scare you, whether that's being photographed, whether that's selling tickets, whether it's performing, whatever it is, the time commitment, financial commitment. And so I did all that, and I sent an email to probably 50 friends of mine who I thought would not be absolutely aghast at this idea. Of those 50 friends, I ended up selecting 16 people who I knew, but they didn't know each other. And we rehearsed for 3 months, and we're like, all right, let's sell tickets. We'll see if we can sell 10, 50. We ended up selling out. 350 people paid to see us dance badly in front of a crowd.
And I think the one that you just had is even larger.
It is, yeah. So that one, this was supposed to be a one-time thing, and it was, at that time, it was called Dance Experiment. And then after it was over and it was wonderful, I was like, great, cross it off the list. Let's move on to the next thing. And then all these people started saying, when's Dance Experiment 2? And I was like, there is no Dance Experiment 2, but so many people asked me. So I had to create an application, fast forward 5 years now. It's not just dance, it's also improv, storytelling, a cappella, and stepping. So five art forms. It's 2 times a year. We had to move to the Park West because we usually sell out.
And the Park West is what's the capacity of that?
It's 750 is a sellout with standing room only. Yeah. So we've had shows between 500 to 700, but we usually do sell out. It is all friends and family. I call it an adult recital. It is people who fly in from all over the country. Most amazing thing ever to see bad dancing, stepping, acting, storytelling. And I shouldn't say bad. It's actually pretty good in that it's...
I've seen videos. It actually is pretty good.
It is good. And then we definitely get singers who...
But it's. But I think that... Sorry to interrupt,
yeah, it's
but
okay.
I think that getting good at it, though, is that they give themselves that permission to start off and be okay with perhaps that it's not going to be that good. And then through practice, then they actually find that they're...
Absolutely,
much
yeah.
Much better at it than they expected, is that
yes,
accurate?
Absolutely. And everything, you know, kind of just stars align and everything comes together. And there's definitely, over the 2.5 months of rehearsals, there are tears. There are like, this is the worst thing ever. I should not have signed up for this. How am I going to perform in front of all my loved ones? This is going to be so embarrassing. And then every single round, the magic happens. My instructors are amazing. And
how do you get people to sign up for this? They pay you, by the way.
They do, yeah. They pay me. It's a huge part of my my revenue stream. It's all word of mouth. Actually, everything that I do is all word of mouth. I haven't spent any money on advertising or marketing, referrals. Actually, the top three sources of referrals for me are friends, and you know that makes sense to me, and that wasn't a big kind of surprise. But then the other two, whenever I have people kind of, you know, fill an application, how did you hear about mac and cheese, my mother or my therapist. So those are my three huge sources of how I get referrals, and I welcome them all. However you find me, that's fine.
What do you think it is that you know, you're striking some sort of nerve inside of these people to put themselves in this situation that they find very uncomfortable? Do you have any hypotheses on what that is?
So I think that a big part of it is going back to what we were talking about initially about not feeling like you are a part of a community, being able to find your tribe, I think is really important. And after college, that tribe, you have to actively go and look for it, as opposed to when you were at summer camp, when you were in college, you know, your friends, there was a huge friend dump on your dorm floor. Like, here are all these people who are the same age of you and same age as you and have similar interests to you, and you know, we're gonna create this environment that is so. Actually, there's a New York Times article that I always reference that I love, that it's called Why Is It So Hard to Make Friends Over 30? And the sociologists in that were quoted as saying that the conditions you need to make authentic relationships, like you had in college, in summer camp, are there's three conditions you need. You need proximity, repeated unplanned interaction, and an environment that encourages you to let your guard down. And so that's what I keep in mind. Every time I create events, that's what I'm going
for.
And if
we kind of go down that list and look at the trends, the things that have gotten more popular over the last few years, which, you know, we'll say Facebook.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. The what was the first one?
Proximity.
Proximity.
Yes,
okay,
proximity.
So you're not physically close to the people you're interacting with. And then there's sort of like a casual interaction.
Yeah,
happens.
Unplanned interactions.
Unplanned interaction.
Yeah. Spontaneous.
You're crossing in the hallway. That's
exactly.
Not happening on something like Facebook. And then
an environment that encourages vulnerability.
Yeah.
And people letting go.
And, you know, social media is a little bit the opposite of that. A lot of the time you have to, people might tend to present a...
their highlight reel. That's what Facebook really is. It's, I know, I got a job. I'm going to Hawaii. I just got married. I got engaged. Look at my babies. People don't post, look at my stretch marks. I got fired. I didn't get the promotion I wanted. Yeah. Whatever. I haven't been on a date. I haven't had sex in 6 months. Whatever it is, people usually don't post that. So I feel like my events encourage people to say, and this is one of my steps in living a life of yes, is be a voice and share your imperfections. It's your imperfections that make you interesting and make you who you are. And as soon as you voice, you know, I have debt, I don't like my mom, I struggle with infertility, any of that. Mm-hmm. Other people in the room are going to get the courage to say me
like,
too.
Well, actually, yeah.
Right? And that's how a community is built. And I think that is a foundation for feeling fulfilled and for living a life of yes, is community and finding your tribe.
Yeah. I mean, so it's just like really a powerful and impressive thing that you're able to craft these interactions and these situations in physical space like that.
I think a big part of it is that I have no shame in sharing my challenges and my struggles and my embarrassing moments and stories. You know, I think we've all seen these kind of like smooth, seemingly really well put together. They've got it, you know, celebrity or whatever, professional speakers. And while, you know, I'm sitting in the audience or watching their TED Talk and I'm like, oh, this is, you know, it's inspiring and motivating, but it just doesn't resonate with me at a level of, you know, an everyday person who, you know, this person is just sharing all the wonderful things about their life. And like, that's wonderful, but I need to see, like, that's not me, right? So I try to set the tone by sharing, you know, I was dumped and, you know, a guy told me that I was too fat to date or whatever it is. And then usually after I share a little bit of vulnerability, then the floodgates open and here we go.
It does.
Yeah, here we go.
I mean, I can tell. I that happened to me. You know, for me to decide that I was going to read my journal up in front of people and say very personal things, it was. I knew that was the type of environment that it was going to be. And that's what it was, people sharing very personal things. So, yeah. You know, that it just like it works in a cycle like that. Yeah. It's really,
it's an infectious
thing.
Too, right? Yeah. So my hope is not only will you as an audience member or you as a participant, you'll be at this event and you'll be inspired to, you know, be vulnerable and maybe step out of your comfort zone, but that hopefully you will infect other people with that. And that's how I'm planning world domination. So,
but were you always that way? Were you always willing to share those things and put yourself in that vulnerable place?
Not at all. I had no personality up until college. I have a very...
Well, that's normal.
I feel like there were definitely, you know, people that I went into middle school with and high school with who, you know, they had opinions and they shared their opinions and they weren't afraid to be a little bit different. And I have a... was very abnormal childhood, which that's a whole nother hour, so we won't go into that. But my whole goal growing up was I wanted to be quote unquote normal, and normal to me meant fitting in and being the same as everybody else. And I am different from everybody in so many different ways, whether it's I've always been 6 feet tall, raised by a single mom, I'm biracial, we didn't have money and all my friends had money, we didn't have a car, Tupperware, microwave, anything that plugged in, basically, blah blah blah. So I could go down that path. So going to college, I went to Boston College, which is a very white Irish Catholic place, and I am none of those things. And I totally stuck out, which in my previous life, that was the end of the world. I was like, oh my God, I stick out. This is horrible. Mm-hmm. I just want to be like everybody else. But going
people that were more interested in somebody that was different.
Yeah, they started treating me like I was this like exotic bohemian, you know, lady from the exotic Midwest of Chicago. Yeah. And I started realizing that, you know what, you can make your differences work to your advantage and they can be beneficial. And that's when I think that's when the seed was planted of like, all right, turn to things that maybe were hurtful or that make you different, that were painful moments of your life, that you can actually share those things and get power and strength through sharing vulnerability. So I think that's where I started learning that lesson, was in college. And then once I got fired and there was shame in that, and I've only been able to say I got fired for the past like few years. I used to say I got let go. That to me was like, there was less shame about getting let go.
Yeah, and I got fired too.
Right. Yeah. But it took a while. Like, I don't know. For me, it took a while to own that and to say I got fired. And I got fired at age, I think I was 25, 26, and none of my friends, like, you
same
know,
age.
I, yeah, I didn't,
like, well, no, were wasn't you? It. I think I was 28, so okay. I actually got that wrong.
Okay, but I just thought there weren't, I didn't know any of my peers who had been fired before, and so there was a shame about it, and then, again, kind of just realized that I'm not the only one, and as soon as I start saying, you guys, I got fired, and it sucked, and, you know, I dealt with this and this and this, everybody's like, me too, me too, me too, and so being a voice and realizing that you are not alone is one of the most eye-opening and ways to give yourself power, I think.
Yeah. So like, what was that first few weeks after you got fired like? Because, like, for myself, I remember in the conversation that I was having with my boss, who's, you know, a friend of mine. I don't have any, you know, no hard feelings towards her at all. But in that conversation, I actually said, this is going to be a very special day in my life, July 17th, 2007. So thank you, because I knew at that moment that I didn't actually want to be working to begin with, and that I was probably never going to work for somebody again.
Yeah.
So what was it like for you when it actually happened, and how long did it take for you to?
Yeah, well, that's great. That's interesting to hear that you say you do right away that, you know, this was going to be a really good thing. Right now, 11 years later, I absolutely say hands down getting fired was the best thing that ever happened to me. But in the moment, and probably for like 3-6 months later, as I was still getting unemployment and unsure, like, how I'm going to pay for health insurance and, you know, seeing all my friends buying condos and going on vacations and me, you know, unable to buy tofu at Trader Joe's or whatever, it was a struggle, definitely, for the first, first year-ish or so, as I was just trying to figure out, trying to find my way and not really wanting to do anything where there was already a path, which can be a good thing and a bad thing, and that, you know, a bad thing in that you feel like you're kind of out there by yourself and, you know, I don't have someone who I can copy, you know, or who I can look to or whatever. But then I have realized that that actually, I think, is one of the best things about what I do, is that nobody has done this before. And so there are no expectations. There's no, you're doing this wrong, because you can't compare me to anybody else. So I have this like blank slate and all this freedom to do it however I want to do it. And so I, you know, I, you just said, you know, you said thank you to your boss, and absolutely, I mean, I do not think I would have had the courage to leave and to go out on my own had he not fired me.
That
so
was
I'm
my
so
problem.
Thankful.
As I don't think I want, I didn't, I mean, I didn't want to be there at all. I didn't want to be working, but I had this, at least with my upbringing, there was just sort of this belief about having a job or something, that was like a thing.
Yeah.
That you needed to do. And honestly, like, I had the first few weeks was just you know, looking at my arm and touching it and realizing that I still existed and that I wasn't going to disintegrate. And I had plenty of money in my bank account, you know, and realizing like, oh, I could actually exist like this for quite a while. And then just getting comfortable with that was the first few weeks for me.
Yeah.
What was the first few weeks like for you?
I don't know, it was all kind of a blur. So I should actually initially say, so my company is Mac and Cheese Productions, and the job that I got fired from was, I was an associate producer at a nonprofit that makes documentaries on social issues. So public housing, inner city violence, education, and I had gained these technical skills, these, you know, editing skills, video editing and producing skills over the year that I was there. And I really enjoyed it, and I didn't want to let that go. So when I came up with a list of things I wish I could get paid to do, the second thing I did after that list was, if I was going to name my company, what would I name it? And I made a list of all the things that when I think of them, they elicit really positive, comfy, warm, fuzzy feelings inside of me. So things like Big Wheels and Cabbage Patch Kids and peanut butter and jelly and mac and cheese. And so for about 20 seconds, I was Peanut Butter and Jelly Productions. And then I was like, no, I think I like mac and cheese better. And I think, you know, universally loved comfort food. And productions initially, though, meant video production. So that's what Mac and Cheese was going to be. And so video production, for that first year I was doing, I found my niche was with nonprofits who would hire me to do videos for, you know, their big galas coming up.
That's kind of what you were doing before, isn't it?
I was making documentaries, as opposed to when I started my own business, it was more, I was making, you know, short video pieces to put on websites and promotional stuff, that type of thing. And I was doing a lot of stuff for individuals, like, we're having a family reunion, can you put together a slideshow of grandma or something like that? But then that's when I started doing the Minglers, and just for fun again, and that's when I realized that there is this huge want and interest in meeting people through different alternative ways, and also that's where my passion lay.
Yeah.
So that's why I gave up the video, and I considered myself very lucky that productions doesn't just have to be video production, can mean a lot of things.
But the video production probably helped pay the bills for
that's exactly that. Yeah, it totally paid the bills for
and
the
you
first.
Got comfortable with the idea of, for me, I know there was a big transition of just like getting comfortable with the details of having a business, of like, you know, I have to have like a different bank account.
Right. Am I S Corp and an LLC? Yeah. Am I, all the like permits you have to get and all that stuff. Yeah, absolutely. And I DIY'd it. I'm a huge DIY person, and I'm sure I did numerous things that were wrong. And I did my taxes by myself for the first 3 or 4 years, and I'm sure that I, you know, made mistakes there. But it was a good, very good learning process. I am actually really glad that I decided to wear all the hats when I first started my business, as far as teaching myself, teaching myself Photoshop and Dreamweaver and how to create a website and how to create a logo and do my taxes, all that stuff. Now I'm at the point where, you know, I can delegate and let the experts do that kind of stuff. But at the beginning, I didn't have the cash to be able to do that. And I actually am very grateful that I didn't have the cash, because I do think, you know, it was a really good learning experience for me.
Yeah, so you learned a lot of stuff out of it, too. And you get to stack those skills. There's some of these things that I know, having been in my own business 8 years or something like that, they just forget how difficult some of those first skills were of even knowing what you open a bank account or what is the entity and all that stuff.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. And it could be very, it's overwhelming. And I found that a lot of the Cheez-Its being people who come to my events, over the 11 years, that is one of the main hurdles that they seem to face is, I really want to make a change in my life, socially, professionally, romantically, spiritually, whatever it is. But there are so many options out there. And so I'm paralyzed by the choice. So I try to help Cheez-Its understand that having choice makes us infinitely richer than so many other people in the world. The fact that, you know, we have an education, the fact that we have a support system, that we have these resources at our disposal, that you should see choice as a good thing and not a negative thing and not be paralyzed. And I see way too many people say like, oh, I would start my business, but I don't have a website, but I don't have a logo. It's not the perfect time. I would talk about the perfect time unicorn. He is never coming. It is never going to be the perfect time to do something. Just do it. Nike the bejesus out of life and it'll work out. I love Tina Fey's quote, say yes and figure it out later. Love it.
Oh, that's funny. I'm actually listening to her audiobook.
Are you like, Bossy Pants?
Presently.
Or,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny you mentioned her. So what was the moment like when the flip switched, when you realized like, oh, I can, you know, maybe like these, you were having this problem and you had the dinner parties and then, you know, you had to start charging. Was that like an uncomfortable decision to make to start charging, or was there any resistance that happened that you had to work through to start making this into a business?
There was one guy who, I don't know, he was a friend of a friend who's like, I have to pay money to go have dinner at this girl's apartment. And I still remember that was 11 years ago. That was my only one.
But for you personally, there wasn't any sort of fears?
I did fear that more people would have that reaction. And especially when I started charging my friends, you know, there's that weird thing. But, I mean, to be honest, like, I need to pay my bills. And I think you have to value what you do. And I started realizing that I'm spending so much time and I'm offering something of value. And you know what? You're never going to be able to please everybody. I would say that with prices, and I hear this all the time from people, Sai, you need to charge more. You need to charge more. You need to charge more. I think I'm very cognizant of, you know, growing up with a single mom, we never had tons of money. And then being in a nonprofit world for my 4 years of, you know, real world experience before doing Mac and Cheese, I didn't ever make tons of money. And so I'm very cognizant of, I never want money to be a reason that someone doesn't do something of mine. And so I keep, all my prices are pretty accessible. But that said, in the past 3 or 4 years, I'm realizing how much of myself and that I do put into my events. And I don't know. They're awesome events, and people should. I think people do value them, and they will pay, you know, more money for that. So I'm at the point now where I definitely want to keep some events that are, you know, $15, $25, $100, and then there's other people who can afford to pay a few $1,000s. And it's actually
with a higher price point too. You can solve deeper problems.
Absolutely,
for them as well.
And what's been really awesome, just speaking of the fear experiment. So many of the alum have had such an amazing experience that over the years they have informally asked me, I had such a good experience. I would love to give you money to allow future people to participate who maybe couldn't normally afford it. And so that just happened informally for about the past 4 years. And finally I was like, all right, let's start a fear experiment scholarship. It's completely 100% funded by alum who decide that they want to give back. And that started last spring. And I've had, I think, 8 people who probably would not have been able to do fear experiment now able to do it.
Yeah. And going back to, you know, the fears of having somebody react poorly to something, I know that's something that a lot of people run into, or I will hear people say about even starting a blog or something, that there's going to be haters, or they're going to get an angry email every once in a while or something. And I know that's held me back a lot of times myself, is thinking about all the stuff that can go wrong, right? And, you know, usually it doesn't, and usually it's not as big of a deal.
The movie playing in your head of what could possibly happen is 1,000 times worse than what actually happens.
Right.
We are so good at talking ourselves out of stuff and making things to be so much more than they are, and going to that what if point. It works out. It really does. And I I think it's one of the best decisions I made as an adult was to take an improv class. I think improv is one of the most awesome, horrible, scary, best, worst things that you can do for yourself as far as working on that fear of I'm going to fail, I'm going to embarrass myself, getting rid of judging yourself, getting rid of judging other people. Even if you have no plans to, you know, be the next Tina Fey or be on Saturday Night Live, I think everybody should actually be required to take an improv class. It makes you a better person, better boss, better employee, better spouse, better significant other, better friend, better parent. You know, the whole yes and, the golden rule of improv being yes and, that whatever you're dealt with, you know, and if you're in a scene with somebody, if they say, hi, Uncle Bob, you don't come back and say, I'm not Uncle Bob, yeah, I'm whatever, right? Right? Because if you start, you agree. If you start
there's,
a scene.
There's actually a good how-to of all of this in the Tina Fey
yes,
book.
Yes, everybody should go read Bossy Pants. It's an amazing, it's a Bible for life, I think. But my favorite improv story is I went to an improv show once and a girl in the show accidentally fell off the stage. And because she had such an awesome, supportive group around her, her teammates for the rest of the show would on purpose fall off the stage so that it made it look like that what she did at the top was not a mistake. And imagine if you were in an environment where you never had to worry about making a mistake and that you could do whatever you wanted and that the people around you would support you. Imagine what a beautiful world this would be, not to get all like hokey and whatever, but go take an improv class.
Well, yeah, and I took improv classes as well, and it's I would highly recommend it to anybody.
Yeah.
In fact, I feel sorry for people if they don't actually like do it. If they hold them back from doing it. It's so fantastic and useful for so many different things. It's really interesting to see the way that you've scaled up from, you know, just having dinner parties to having these events, and now you're talking about charging more and more. I know that, you know, in the tech world, where I definitely have a foot in there, people are often afraid to start a venture or will resist starting a venture because they feel like the activities or whatever they're doing won't scale, that it's not like this electronic automated thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're doing events, like that's a thing that clearly doesn't initially, quote unquote, scale. Was that ever a fear that you had, or did you ever think like, oh, this isn't a big enough thing for me to pursue to build into a business?
I would say initially I didn't have those thoughts at all because I was just worried about how am I going to pay rent. So I didn't have time to think about that stuff. I just got to get out and do it. And it occupied all my time. And so MBA students are always like, you never had a business plan. That's the worst thing in the world. But I didn't want to spend time thinking about where do I want to go in 5 years or 10 years? Like I need to just go and do it. Right. So initially I wasn't concerned about that, but then I started seeing as I got more and more entrenched in the entrepreneur world and startup world, I saw a lot of my peers who were, you know, getting angel investors and VCs and venture capitalism, and they were getting on, you know, the cover of this magazine or featured here, and they were scaling and going to other cities, and I was like, oh, well, that's, you know, I am not successful yet because my peers are doing this and I have not yet reached that. So, oh, and going through incubators and all that. So I was like, all right, I need to go to business school. I need to be in an incubator. And then I realized that I had all the stress in my life and it was completely self-created stress. Nobody cares about any of that. Me not having an MBA did not take away from my ability to be able to throw an event. And people were having amazing times and telling all their friends about all this awesome stuff that I was doing, regardless that I didn't fit the traditional mold of success, right? Stephen Covey always talks about you want to make sure that your ladder is not leaning against the wrong wall of success, right? Because I think that, you know, we all have different definitions of success. And so my success is going to be probably very different from your success. So it took me a while to realize that. But then once I did realize that it's okay that I don't have all those things, that I let scaling go. And so initially that was I gotta grow mac and cheese and I gotta get it in X number of cities and I have to find Saya's in San Francisco and New York and Boston. And then I realized my mantra over the past few years has been, let me get it right in Chicago first and make sure I can do it well here and make sure I can serve myself well and serve Cheez-Its in Chicago well. And then once I get that right, then I'll consider expanding, yeah. Right? And I'm at that point now where I can do all this stuff in my sleep here, and I am ready for world domination. I'm ready at passive income and travel. I don't have pets. I don't have kids. I have a really supportive husband. Like, this is a time for me to pick up. I mean,
haven't I seen you floating around different places lately on social media? I think that
mini lives. Totally stole that from you. I love that idea.
I sort of stole it from
all right, well,
people
that's
too,
in, so. That's how it works, right? Yeah. But yeah, the idea of being able to, you know, pick up and move to another place, not for vacation, and just to, you know, do your regular everyday, but in Mexico or wherever. So yes, I have been traveling a lot more, and I've been doing mostly, it's for been speaking engagements and kind of, you know, one-off workshops. I have not yet done the next level of expansion, which to me is, do I actually move somewhere for a few months and do fear experiment in San Francisco? Obviously, that is not sustainable. I can't move to all these different places and be the person who runs all the things. So do I want to find Sayas in all these different places? Do I want to franchise? A lot of people have asked me over the years, like, do you have a mingler in the box or fear experiment in a box where can you teach me how to do this and that let me run with it and do it in my city? So I just actually led my first webinar yesterday, and it just opened my eyes to I've been pushing back really hard on webinars. I don't know why, but so many people have been asking me about to do them for years and years and years. And I think, actually, I do know why. I think because I am such an in-person person, and that's what mac and cheese is. It's, you know, bringing people together in the same room and watching the loveliness that happens from that. But doing the webinar yesterday made me realize how fun and easy it is to spread Life of Yesness, and that you can, if you do a good job creating this online vibe and community and outlet, that those people are going to get together in person wherever they are. So as far as scaling and expansion, that's where I am right now. It's
you've been able to sort of curate these experiences and build the culture of it all, and you're also building a little bit of skills with doing these events in other places, or, you know, you do the speaking, you get used to how to keep things running in your home base while you're away, and you can slowly stack those
absolutely
and eventually scale up, whether it's franchising or, you know, hiring somebody in another location or doing webinars. It's a great way to scale.
Yeah, I was amazed at how fun it was. It was just so easy too. So I feel I'm at that point, like, I need to you need to embrace technology. And even if you are all about in-personness and community, like, there's ways to leverage technology to make all of that even that much sweeter.
You've crafted your culture. So now you're kind of ready to
spread my wings.
Spread it a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
So running all this must be a ton of work. And I know that you also teach a productivity class. So I'm wondering if you have any one or two killer productivity tips for somebody who switches hats all the time and runs everything themselves.
Yeah, my productivity class is 4 hours, and that is not enough by any means. This is a great question. It's just so hard for me to answer because, one, I love talking about productivity, so I could talk about it for hours on end. And I feel like it's you're asking me, like, which one of my children do I love the best? Like,
no, you're right.
But that said, I do have a couple that I can throw out there if you want. So I would say that Boomerang for Gmail is one of my loves right now, where you can I use it for two reasons. There's a send later function, which is really important to me as someone who works all the time. I do not want clients of mine thinking that I am on email at 10 o'clock at night, though I do like being able to send emails at 10 o'clock at night. So I will send an email and then say, Boomerang, I actually don't want you to send this until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, that type of thing. And actually, when I'm on vacation, I probably shouldn't be saying this, but when I'm on vacation, I hate coming back from vacation with that dread of, like, oh, my inbox is going to be so full, right? So I actually check email, and I do work over vacation, but I don't want people thinking that I'm doing that. So I will answer all the emails.
None of the responses go out until after you get back.
Yes.
Because that's the other terrible thing is if you are on at 10 o'clock at night or something, or 11 or 2 in the morning, And you send that email, and then like 5 minutes later, you get a response from that person. It just sort of creates this anxiety. You can't really.
And also, and even if it's, you know, during normal work hours, if you send, if you respond to someone right away, they think that you're accessible right now, and then they'll start sending you, you know, you'll get into like a chat thing. Like sometimes I just do a send later that's like half an hour from right now because I don't want someone to start messaging me back and forth and that type of thing. So, yeah. So I love Boomerang for Gmail. What else? I love, Evernote, digital filing cabinet. It was one of those things that when I first heard about Evernote, I tried it for a day and I was talk about, you know, being overwhelmed by all the options and choices. Like, I have no idea where to go. I can't use this. And I didn't touch it for a year after that. And then I read.
That really commonly.
Yes.
People would say like, I can't get into it.
Yes.
And I was
yes.
one of those people.
Absolutely.
Too.
I hear it all the time. What actually really helped me was I discovered a few people who had done all the legwork already. One of them being Michael Hyatt. Michael Hyatt has an amazing blog that has a gazillion in Evernote posts, just talking about how to tag everything, how to set it up so you're organized, and just giving some really practical, fantastic examples of how he uses it both personally and professionally. So now Evernote, I can't imagine my life without Evernote.
Yeah, and I actually have a tip for getting started for that, for people who can't get into Evernote. I think of it like cell division, like growing organically. If you start with one notebook called Inbox with a note in it called Inbox, and whenever you want to put something, whenever you have something you want to record, you just put it in Inbox, and you just let that file get big. You will know when it's time to create
another
new note
yeah.
or a new notebook, and then eventually you can grow into the stacking and the tagging. That's feedback that I hear all the time about Evernote, that people can't get into it, and that's the thing that works for me. I still have an Inbox note in every notebook that I have. So, because I don't want the cognitive anxiety of trying to decide whether I should make a new note
right.
for something or not. So, yeah, so those are some great tips there.
And I actually have on my website, because I get asked all this stuff all the time, and I'm a big person, a lover of efficiency, I was like, I just need to put all this stuff in the FAQ section. So if people are interested in more of my favorite apps and productivity tools, on my FAQ page on my website, macandcheeseproductions.com, there's a whole list.
And I also noticed on your website that you've gotten quite a bit of press coverage. So I wondered if you had any tips for any folks out there on how to get press coverage. I don't know if it's, you know, sometimes it happens. I'm not very good at being proactive about it.
Yeah. So I would actually say that 100% of the press that I've gotten has, quote unquote, fallen in my lap. And not to say that, you know, I don't work hard, but I don't actively, just like same thing for speaking engagements. I don't want to have to pound the pavement. I don't want to go look for press. I don't want to go look for speaking engagements because it's going to make it not fun for me. So all the press I have gotten has kind of been the same thing as far as the Cheez-It to find me, all word of mouth. And So it's all just fallen in my lap.
That's equally useful advice as any advice, I think, is that if, you know, sometimes being proactive about press can distract you from
absolutely, and it can make you hate your job. Like if you're doing sales all the time, Well, I think if you have a product or a service that sells itself, that is the best thing in the world, right?
Yeah. Now, as we wrap up, I've got some sort of rapid fire questions.
Oh, no.
They might not go that fast, but
they're not math,
we'll
are
see.
They?
No,
I can't do
no,
math. Okay.
What's the biggest compromise that you've had to make in building your business?
Biggest compromise. I constantly feel like a horrible person, and at the same time feeling like I am the most awesome rock star in the world. And the reason is because I get asked all the time, as I'm sure you do as well, Dave, about can we go get coffee? Can I pick your brain? Can I take you out for a drink, right? And I remember when I first started 11 years ago, how many people I asked to do that, and how many people said yes to me, and how helpful that was, and how appreciative I was. And so when kind of the tables turn and I started being the person who gets asked to coffee, and usually it's in a very flattering, complimentary, what you're doing is so awesome, I'm so inspired, I would love to take you out for coffee. I used to say yes to everybody. And then I realized that you can't say yes to everybody. And I actually, I'm just not interested in saying.
The harder it is.
I know, it's so true, right? So the compromise is that, you know, I get all this amazing feedback about what a nice person I am, and I'm growing all this community, and I'm helping so many people, and then I am constantly saying no to people. But I think I figured out the way to do it is, you know, there's a way that you can say no to someone that is still helpful and insightful. So I can't go get coffee with you, but here's a couple of my events coming up that I would love to meet you there. Or here are some events that I'm going to if you want to meet me at this networking event. Also, it seems like you're looking for a life coach or a therapist or a career counselor. I'm not any of those things, but I know people who are. Here's a referral, that type of thing. Yeah. So my compromise is learning how to say no and learning how to be a bitch without being a bitch, I guess.
Have you ever tried Clarity FM?
No, I haven't. Okay. People have said, talked, why should I? Yeah, why?
I don't necessarily know. I just recently set up my Clarity profile because I do get asked a lot and I would like to help people. But, you know, it's sort of customer development. It's like, all right, people want to talk, but who will pay to talk?
Right. Yep.
And what will they pay to talk? As much as that might make me sound like a jerk, but you can't go to coffee with everybody.
You can't.
And when have you left money on the table?
I would say, so I always talk about part of living a life of yes is discovering and utilizing and valuing your superpowers, and superpowers being things that come naturally to you, that are easy for you, that you may not think of as a skill because it's so easy, like, you know, cooking without a recipe or adding fractions or being good with Excel. But I have realized that one of my superpowers has been using what I do have to create awesomeness and not creating those times of stress. And so to get to your question, I have been pretty lucky and pretty good at there have not been many times where I have had to put myself in a situation of like, oh gosh, I have to do this thing that's going to cost tons and tons of money and super, you know, high risk and stressful. And I always, you know, when I first started Mac and Cheese, I was so appreciative that I didn't sell things, and I didn't have 10,000 widgets that I had to go buy and then store in my garage. Yeah. No inventory, right? So for the most part, I haven't left money on the table because I've been really good at using what I do have and not creating kind of these stressful situations. But I decided to finally dip my toe in the product world, and I just came out with some Life of Yes products, posters and note cards, decals, which was very scary for me in that, I'm shelling out money, and am I in 6 months and I have a closet full of Life of Yes posters that nobody has bought, right? So I am hoping that this is not a scenario of me leaving money on the table and that people will love everything that I offer product-wise. But I feel like when you get to that point in your business where you're like, all right, I can take some financial risks. And so this was a financial risk for me. So I'm hoping that it will be one that was a wise risk to take. But other than that, I can't really, people always are like, people are very surprised that I have somehow created this magical land where I invite you to pay me to come to my house and you bring all the food and the drink. Creating these situations where, you know, money is not a stress for me usually.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. What was the last book that you read that changed the way that you saw something?
Ooh, that's a good one. I have a dream of being a New York Times best-selling author, and reread. Yeah, if you have any tips for that, let me know. I just reread Anne Lamott's Bird by Bird, and it changed. It made my dream of being a New York Times best-selling author. It made it more real and attainable because she just does such an amazing job of kind of just breaking things down. And
Bird by Bird is the name?
Yeah, Bird by Bird.
And what is that?
It's a for those of you that don't know her, she is a writer and has been writing for years and years and years. And she's very, very transparent and just very skilled in kind of giving her readers all these aha moments. And she's very funny. And so the Bird by Bird is a I was going to say kind of a how-to. So if you want to be a writer, this is how you do it. But it's so much more than a how-to book. But mm-hmm. for anybody who's interested in writing a book or just writing in general, you know, she just deals with all of the, like, how do you get past feeling like you're an imposter and that, you know, you're not an author and a writer, so you shouldn't be writing a book, or how do you deal with writer's block? How do you, all that kind of stuff that we all go through, right? And she does it in a way that just gave me a lot of aha moments and made me feel like, all right, Sai, I can do this. So, you know, let's stop making excuses. That perfect time unicorn I referenced earlier, like, mm-hmm. I kept waiting for, like, oh, I gotta wait until I have more time, or I took a party of one trip to Mexico for a week last year. I was like, all right, I'm gonna take this trip so that I can write my book. And just stop making excuses. Like, you can you don't need to go to Mexico for a week by yourself to write a book. Wow. So it helps, but you don't have to do that. So yeah, so I say her book really kind of opened my eyes to, like, this can happen. I can I can realize my dream.
Yeah. Do you make your bed?
No. I think that's such a waste of time. Who cares? Oh my gosh. No, absolutely not. I do not that's make my funny. Bed. I make my bed when people are coming over, like if my husband's mother is coming over, or if, you know, there's going to be guests in our bedroom for some reason, but absolutely not. What a waste of time. Come on.
You're the second guest that I've actually asked this, and it's one of these things that I've heard before, is like the one tip for, having a productive life is to make your bed. And it's something that I didn't, I have the same thought about it growing up, especially when my mother would want me to make my bed. I just thought it was such a waste of time. Like, you're going to sleep in it.
Right.
Again, but I recently started doing it.
And has it made a difference?
You know, it's probably still a waste of time.
Yeah.
it's like I kind of rue the day that I started being concerned with the cleanliness of my living space. Because, you know, clean mind or clean space, clean mind. There's something saying
yes.
about that.
Something prolific.
Like, there's actually some people cleaning my apartment right now. So I don't necessarily need to do the cleaning myself, but I like to have it clean now, and I just wish that I didn't. I wish I was like I was when I was 20 and I didn't care.
I think you do what works for you. I mean, that whole people also say that, you know, especially if you work from home, that in order to be productive, you have to wake up at a certain time every day and you have to put pants on and get dressed. And that is one of the perks for me of being self-employed and working from home, is I rarely put pants on. And that, to me, like, that doesn't make me – it's so the whole point of that is, make your bed, don't put pants on, put pants on, don't make your bed. Whatever works for you.
It was funny because when I invited you for the interview and then I said, oh, I could come to your place or you can come to the studio, you said, well, I'll go to the studio because then I'll put pants on. But I hope you were going to put pants on anyway.
If you would come to my space? I don't know. I'm so comfortable in my own space and with you. You should take that as a compliment that I'd be sitting around, no pants on.
Compliment taken.
Maybe that's the name of your podcast. I don't know. No pants podcast.
Podcast. Yeah. It actually has some nice alliteration to it. Yeah. It would work really well.
Feel free to take that if you want it.
I'm going to Google that after that and make sure that somebody hasn't taken it before. Do you have any final message for people who are listening, or ways they can contact you? Or both?
Yeah, let's do both. So, final messages. Thinking of the webinar, just coming off this webinar that I did yesterday, we asked a couple of poll questions, and one of the questions was, do you ever feel lonely? I think 70% of the people said yes, they feel lonely. And there are some other questions about, do you feel shame? Are you embarrassed? Is it hard for you to ask? Is it hard for you to say no? Is it hard for you to go places by yourself? So I bring all that up because I'm sure some of your listeners are probably people who also struggle with those things.
Yes,
they are humans, right? We all most struggle with those things. Again, reiterating the you are not alone in all of those feelings, and that the power that you can find in realizing you're not alone, not having shame about X, Y, and Z, and then also voicing whatever it is, whatever your issues are, your concerns are. So just, I would highly encourage people to be vulnerable. Watch Brene Brown's vulnerability talk. Her TEDx talk is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
So be vulnerable and take an improv class. If you don't know what you're awesome at, this is one of the saddest moments in my 11 years of doing Mac and Cheeseness has been when I ask people on applications, I ask them two questions. What are you good at? What are you proud of? And then also, you know, what do you wish you could change about yourself? What don't you like about yourself? And people will give me paragraph upon paragraph about all the things they don't like about themselves. Wow. And they can't give me one thing about a positive thing about themselves. So I would just hope that for your listeners, that if you do not know what your superpowers are, and you do have superpowers, you just may not realize them, a suggestion I would make would be to email 5 people in your life from different sectors, friends, family, coworkers, and ask them what they think your superpowers are. It is such an eye-opening, awesome experience to have that.
That is, and if I can add to that, I mean, I think that that's something to listen to as well, is, and that has been useful for me. Times when somebody has maybe made an observation about me that I was good at something, and I would say, oh, really? Like, yep. I had no idea. Because those are the things that you can't see, because they come easy to you.
Yep. Absolutely.
And so it's hard to tell.
Absolutely. And whenever, so if you ever just like need a pick me up, it's so easy to beat yourself up. Send out an email and ask people what your superpowers are. So I would say that, encourage people to do that. And then as far as getting in contact with me, macandcheeseproductions.com is my website. And I'm super active on social media, Twitter, Instagram, all that. If you follow the Life of Yes hashtag, I usually tag all my things with that. And if you're in the Chicagoland area, come on out to an event. And who knows, World Domination is happening, hopefully. So maybe I'll be in your city at some point.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming outside. It's been a lot of fun, and I think that this will be really inspiring for a lot of people and get them to go ahead and take action. So thanks so much for coming here.
Yeah, my pleasure, and you were worth putting pants on.
Great. Thank you. So there we have it. Before I go, I gotta ask, do you like books? If you do, I'd love to send you my book recommendations. About 90% of them will be nonfiction on subjects spanning from biographies to neuroscience. Just go to cadavy.net/reading, sign up, and you'll get my first set of recommendations right away. You'll be supporting the show if you buy any of those books through the links in the email. This has been Love Your Work, and I'm David Cadavy. The theme music for this show is CNU, performed by the Album Leaf, courtesy of Sub Pop Records. Love Your Work is a production of Cadavy, Inc.